Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. Today, Betsy Priolo is back by popular demand. Now, Betsy came on our show in episode 53 to talk about her book, Swoon, Great Seductors and Why Women Love Them. But today, she's back to talk about her other book, Seductresses, Women Who Ravish the World and Their Lost Art of Love. Betsy looks at history's great seductresses and sees what they all have in common. What makes these women mirror the mythical goddesses? Seductresses are not the blonde bimbos you think they are. A great deal are below average looks, some even ugly, and many old, but they still have the erotic firepower and tools of love that have men throwing themselves at them. I am really excited for this show. Betsy, welcome back. Well, Betsy, it was so good having you last time. That's why you're back, because you're amazing.
Oh, it's wonderful to be back. You're an amazing interviewer.
Thank you. So last time we talked about men, the great seducers, and right. Today we're going to talk about women, the great seductresses.
Right.
First of all, tell me, what is a seductress?
Yes, a seductress is a great enchantress, a woman who knows how to conquer and keep the men she wants. Now, these are the best men, the men who are good for her.
The men that are good for her.
Okay? Exactly.
Not necessarily that she's good for them, but that they're good for her.
Right.
Okay. So let me
right.
let's just jump into this. Are you a seductress?
I'm like a kid with a nose in a candy store window. I would love it.
So that's your aspiration.
You've got it. Yeah.
So jump in. Tell me some of the myths. When people think of seductress, they think of young, sexy, perfect bodies, perfect face. What are the myths
right.
of what a seductress is, and what are they really like?
Yes.
And I know the different types.
Yeah, we have them completely wrong. They've just been mired in myths. I mean, we have the idea that they're number 10 supermodels, that they are man-eating, vicious vamps, that they're ditzy man-pleasers, or that they're these sex toys. You know, they're babes with porn star skills. But women who seduce men for a lifetime aren't like that at all. These are smart, sexy, swanky, strong women of less than average looks.
Less than average looks.
Less than average looks.
Interesting.
Who rock men with their radiant personalities and their seductive skills.
So the radiant personality, is it that they're making the man feel like $1 million, or how do they get their control?
That's really interesting. They use a unique erotic art. It cannot be found in seduction manuals today. This is something...
But you're going to open up and tell us the secrets.
That goes back many, many years. They plug into an age-old skill set of amorous arts that most women don't know about today.
Could you share some of the secrets of that, or what?
Of course. Well,
this is why we're going to have millions of people listening to you, okay? And buy your book.
Well, first of all, we should say what women should not do. First of all, I think women should tune out all of the propaganda today. I mean, what's happened is that we have a materialistic view now of female allure. It's commercialized. So women are looking for love in all the wrong places.
Hence all the food disorders and all the eating disorders
right.
and the age phobias.
Exactly. Okay. We have 10 million women with food disorders, as you know. And then we have low self-esteem. I think women have to pump up their self-esteem. They have to rev their courage. And they also have to tune out cultural conditioning. I think that's really toxic for women. I mean, the idea that women have to be submissive, that they have to be pleasers, that they have to conform, and so on. But the worst thing that's happened to women is this commercialization, the idea that you can buy seduction. And I think the magazines, television, everything tells them that all they have to do is go to the mall, go to the beauty salon, go to a dress shop, go to the gym, or go to the OR, and men will flock because of that. But what's really curious is that this July 29th, there was a big survey, and only 1% of men ranked beauty as number one for what they wanted in women.
And I would agree with that. I think the only people that I find who that is not true for are teenagers and very young 20s. Mm-hmm. But certainly men over 30 do not rank beauty as number one unless they're 30 going on 18, which we have a lot of those men.
That's beautifully phrased. You know? Beautifully phrased.
So I'm really glad that, by the way, that you mentioned that. And we're not saying that going and looking as good as you want to look is important. We're saying that that's simply not the way that you're going to really be a seductress.
No. Okay. And the great seductresses that I studied did not neglect physical lures. They didn't. It's just they did things differently. They did them with imagination, with creativity and uniqueness. They wanted to pop from the crowd. They wanted to make a grand entrance. As one of the great seductresses said, Diane de Poitiers, you must dazzle. And so these women invented a kind of signature look, which is interesting. And they broke from the pack. And I guess that's what I'm telling women in this book. So the most important thing is to take who you are to the max, because that's what men really crave, is full personhood. You know, a complex, interesting, ever fascinating woman.
I completely agree. Men think they want submission. But just like when they have a dog, yes, they'll love it and pet it, but it still becomes the dog. So what they want is men are generally conquerors.
Yeah.
And what it sounds to me like, a seductress, she will not be conquered. Okay. In fact, it sounds like she's the conqueror. So are normally seductresses, are they alpha women?
Absolutely. I think that these are vanguard women who anticipated feminism, at least the ones that I studied throughout history. This is not to say that seductresses don't exist today, but in the past, women had to seduce for their supper. They really had no other option.
That's interesting. So that was just a necessary.
Exactly.
So what are some of the secrets of seducing men?
So the big secret of seducing men, for these women anyway, is that they understood the true nature of erotic passion. I mean, Hallmark has given us this idea that love is sweetness and light and roses and valentines and easy as Sunday morning. But love isn't like that.
That's why I don't buy Hallmark cards.
It's not like that. It is a drama. It's a violence of the soul. It realigns your neurons. And it's also a fixation on a very specific person. It's also a pleasure blast. And it's a verb. It's emotion in motion, as Mae West said. So the seductresses imbued all their erotic arts with these core truths about love. Exciting. They put drama and they put imagination into their love arts. They emphasized their individuality. They played it up. They didn't try to be like other women. They delivered a pleasure blast, and they kept things bubbling. They were always keeping men interested. That is to say, they didn't rest on their laurels. They didn't say, I've got this man. I can go to Tiffany's. Now I can rest on the chaise, and he'll come home with flowers, because it doesn't operate that way.
I would like you probably to say that 100 times because because most most women, you know, I had a client the other day who said, I don't understand. I married a sports car, and in, you know, 2 years I got a bus. You know, the idea that the play in life and in relationships is like the law of entropy. Everything seeks a lower energy level. You got to keep pumping it up.
Yes,
that's really great.
That's lovely.
And I'm fascinated by the fact that they started at a survival.
Yes.
And then somewhere the pleasure center kicked in.
Yes.
So what does this seductress do in bed or with her physical and her verbal contact with these men?
Well, these are two different areas. Well,
okay.
Let's talk about the bedroom.
Let's talk about the bedroom.
One of the most misunderstood seductive arts for women. If you pick up Cosmopolitan or any of these popular magazines, they will instruct women in a dozen different positions and what men want and, you know, do this on your knees and so forth and so on. But I discovered that the women, the great seductresses throughout history, were highly sexed and they were pleasure claimers. And I think this is what men really want in bed. They want a woman who really, really enjoys herself.
Ah, interesting. And I have to agree with you. I have to agree with you. If they are pleasure receivers, it's a turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
If they are pleasure claimers, it's a huge turn on.
Right. So yeah. I think women go into the bedroom clutched up. They're all propagandized. They think, this is what a man wants. He wants this. He wants that. He wants a lobster grip. He wants fill in the blank. You know, I'm really good at, you know, this and that and the other thing. But that's really not the way to success in the bedroom. The way to success is to forget all of that and plug into your pleasure center and go with it. You know, it's not a cerebral act. And
right. I mean, it's regression. Meaning,
yeah.
What I tell people is that sex is play. You're supposed to go back to being a child,
yes.
Get dirty, muddy, and sloppy, and don't think.
Exactly. You know. And these women were like that. I was just amazed that they were just sexual Maseratis. They were incredible. I mean, they were very, very sexual at times when female sexuality was considered aberrant, that the ideal woman was sexless, pure, the good housewife. So these women kicked over the traces and just claimed their hypersexuality and ran with it, which is not a bad advice for women today.
No, it's not, because one of the things from my perspective is that men are inherently sexually inferior. Okay. You know, you can't fake an erection. Woman could fake an orgasm. A man, you know, can't fake the orgasm or the erection. And women are much more multi-orgasmic than men, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
So I think that there is the balance in nature between men being more muscular and more
right. And
have more physical strength, and women have more sexual strength. But what happens is when a woman is a receiver, and she's in fact getting pleasure, it actually creates this lifting of the male ego. Like, I could do this to this woman.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
You know, and when she's just, you know, the submissive, it's kind of becomes, you know, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, I can walk away and it's all the same.
Exactly. We have a sex toy.
Why doesn't everyone know this?
I know.
Why aren't you on TV? What's wrong with you?
It's strange. It's really strange. I don't understand that.
I don't understand.
Except that people like instructions and they like lists and I don't know. And women want to be told if I do X, Y, and Z. But one of the things they need to do is throw out the instruction sheet when they walk in the bedroom. And plug into their own nerve endings.
How do they break away from the propaganda out there, and how do they achieve this type of self-confidence to be out there and be unique and individualized and proud of who they are, kind of peacockish, even though they're not the most beautiful.
Right.
Okay. And they're not the youngest. So what is it that allows them to get that kind of confidence?
I'm not really sure. This is partly a mystery because many of the women in my book were raised incredible hardship. I mean, one of them, La Belle Otero, who is one of the greatest sirens of all time, she was called the suicide siren because 8 men committed suicide over her.
Was she Jewish?
No, this woman was a Spanish spitfire. But she was abused, actually raped until her pelvis broke when she was 10 years old. Hmm. Her mother was the village puta, prostitute. She didn't know who her father was. She ran away from home and lived by her wits and her body until she was about 14 and met somebody who taught her to dance. And then she danced in a bar in Nice. And this American impresario saw her, fell madly in love with her, deserted his wife and 3 children, and recreated her as La Belle Otero, took her to America. And pretty soon, all the Vanderbilts and so forth were loading her with diamonds, and she became the most successful courtesan. That is to say, she was able to pick and choose the men that she wanted in history. She was also
interesting.
Also lost the most money. But to get back to your question, what gave her the spine? What gave her the courage to rebel? To chuck all of that feminine conditioning and say, I'm going to do it my way regardless. I think in the old days we used to call this self-actualization. And it comes from some kind of inner strength. And it doesn't necessarily come from the places you would imagine, a nurturing family, for example, and, you know, a good shrink and all of the rest of it. These women were just incredibly resilient. They, at some point in their lives, just said, enough. I'm going to break out of the feminine mold, the feminine lockdown in domestica, the idea of the angel of the house, and I'm going to be my own person.
See, that's the lesson for women. Be angry, but turn it into something powerful.
And positive.
And positive. Don't,
absolutely.
You know, there's a verse in the scripture that says, be angry, but sin not.
Yes.
And don't let the sun go down upon your anger.
Yes.
Meaning, so anger is a form of injustice and frustration.
Right.
And being trapped. But to turn that into something quite powerful and pleasurable that gives you control is actually, it seems, what this woman did.
Yes, yes.
Now, are seductresses normally monogamous, or are they polyamorous?
I'm afraid many of them were polyamorous.
Why are you afraid?
Well, no. I mean, we like to think that they're monogamous, and I must say some did become monogamous when they met the man of their dreams. But that's slightly unusual. They're more like the women in, there was a psychiatrist named Mary Ann Scherfe who wrote a book in the 60s, and she theorized that women's hypersexuality made them naturally polygamous, that it was to their advantage to copulate with many, many different men. That was just a theory, and it was carried on by various other theorists throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And now in this new book, What Women Want, Daniel Bergner suggests that women are naturally probably polygamous. So the women in my book tended to have many affairs with men. They paid not as much attention as I would have liked to fidelity. They had lovers on the side. One of the great here's an interesting story. Violet Gordon Woodhouse, a woman nobody's ever heard of, but she lived in Edwardian England, and she was called the greatest pianist, the greatest musician, actually, of her day. She popularized the harpsichord, bringing it back into public use. This amazing woman lived all of her life with 4 men in a menage a cinq, if you can believe that. She had a huge house in the country, and all of these men were so riveted by her, so intrigued, that they couldn't leave her.
Interesting.
And so she circulated among these men. I think her husband actually was probably gay, but the other three men, she had a special day for each one, and she just rotated among them, and they were her muses. They inspired her, and even in old age, she was attracting men, into this incredible menage.
She obviously had the ability to make a man feel as a man wants to feel. And it's interesting, because what it sounds like is that often men will pick someone who allows them to be the alpha, but down deep inside, they don't necessarily always want to be the alpha. They want to be challenged. They want someone who is sexually alive and free and not necessarily submissive.
Yeah. It was her vitality, her incredible vitality, that was so mesmerizing. And her conversation, which in those days was unique in that it was not only educated and interesting, but it was bawdy. And that's part of the attraction of love. When we love someone, we want to jump the turnstiles. We want to relax. We want festivity. We want to escape the round of duty and predictability.
Now, are we talking, Betsy, about loving someone or being in love?
I wonder what the distinction is.
Here's what the distinction is, and this is what I find. I find that when I go through talking to clients and I ask, do you love your wife? Mm-hmm. I love my wife. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, well, if you were on a business trip for a couple of weeks or vacation, mm-hmm. do you miss her? Well, no, I'm glad to get away. But those who are in love breathe this person, think about this person. They just get the greatest amount of joy of being around them as much as they can.
Exactly.
So the in love part is almost in love insane. It's close to that insanity where they lose perspective because this person is so overwhelming. And what I find is that almost some people start in love, but quickly they go from in love to just love.
Right. I think this is one of the seductress's secrets, is that they kept the men in love.
I think that's true.
And this Violet Gordon Woodhouse that I was referring to, had these men in thrall. They could not leave her. They tried, and over 30 years, a man named Bill Barrington, beautiful movie star looks, cultivated everything, tried over and over again to leave her. Then there was a really adorable lawyer. He couldn't leave her either. They tried, but over the years, they remained in love.
These seductresses sound like heroin.
Right.
So the fact that they are dealing heroin, being themselves, is this why the 8 suicides took place?
That's fascinating. I don't know. In that case, La Belle Otero's case, the reason these men committed suicide is because she was a little difficult. And that's a curious theme that I found in studying the seductresses, is that they provided, along with all of the delights of love, all of the positivities, the nurture, for example.
So they were nurturing. So did they embody the mother instinct and kind of, that whole Freudian dynamic of being close to mom and yet that sexual attraction and yet it's not your mom, so you're allowed to do it? I mean, what was going on there?
Yeah, that's a very delicate mix, and they worked that perfectly because they provided all of the maternal sweets, but at the same time, they remained extremely sexy at the same time. I think a man gets really terrified when he gets too close to mom. And they cut that by remaining very, very sexual and seductive.
So let's be clear. They're not bitches. They don't whine and complain. They get what they want by making the man feel empowered and desired, and desirous of them.
Yes.
Correct? So are they always on, or do they ever let their guard down?
I think they're themselves. I think that's the best way to put it. I think these are women of high vitality. That's also extremely seductive. These women were the life force incarnate. They were Powerfrau's. They were just full of energy. And it was that energy created a kind of a valence, I guess, that just pulled men. And so I don't think that they faked anything. That's one of the fallacies, I think, about seductresses.
That's interesting.
Is that they were devious in some way.
And so that, this is who they were. This was their identity.
This is who they were. They were full of playfulness. They were full of exploratory energy and creativity and this amazing love of life. Isabella Stewart Gardner, you know, has the museum up in Boston, was one of the plainest of the seductresses in my book. And she said, "I may not be as beautiful, Diana, but I'm sure I have more life than she did."
That's really interesting.
And as a result, men were just pulled in battalions around her, loaded her with presents. When she ever went to a dance, she chandeliered. That is, she danced in the center of the room, and every man cut in and wanted to dance with her.
Very interesting.
So that she had that intense joie de vivre.
Do we have any modern seductresses that you could, you know, observe and look around and see who they might be?
You know, it's hard to say because...
Who looks close?
I like Angelina Jolie.
I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, yes, she has, you know, a past we're not proud of particularly. But at the same time, you know, she's a brave, punchy woman who's able to claim what she wants and swagger out and did some very nice work, I think, for women. And revealing her battle with cancer and so forth, and other things.
So one thing, it's interesting because it sounds like the feminist movement mm-hmm. would almost have a problem with seductresses, you know, because they are, in fact, charming men like a snake charmer and really controlling their emotions. Where does feminism and being a seductress, where do they clash and where do they fit?
Well, it was the second wave feminism that caused all the trouble.
Because explain that. What's the first wave?
First wave were the initial suffragettes. You know, we're going back now to the 19th century. Second wave, Gloria Steinem and Simone de Beauvoir was the grand leader of that movement, Betty Friedan and so forth. This movement opposed seductresses violently. Simone de Beauvoir had a whole chapter. She called them the slavish little sisters. And if you read some of that literature, they called charm a four-letter word. We want to be authentic, ourselves, no makeup. Men can take us as we are, no more tricks. Well, they misunderstood seduction completely, which is an art form that goes back to ancient Greece. So they didn't get it right at all. They threw out the baby with the bathwater. As a matter of fact,
it sounds like they threw everything out because they didn't get it.
It's like
understanding marketing is it doesn't look the package doesn't matter what the package looks like. It doesn't matter what the restaurant looks like. I go to a restaurant because the food is good, but I like the atmosphere.
Exactly, that's a very very good analogy. Yes,
interesting.
So then they left a whole generation of women without any operating instructions at all. So today, what we have in the post-hookup world are a lot of women who are confused at sea. They don't understand how to control their erotic destinies. And that's what the great seductresses did, which is just it's so amazing to watch. I mean, if a woman who is the seductress finds a man that she fancies, it's a done deal. She has got this man.
She consumes him.
And today, when I talk to my daughter's friends, you know, this is the Gen Y generation, they are really baffled. They don't know what to do. I mean, 75% of women to now actually call men up or text them, I'm sorry, ask them out and so forth. But they are rejected more than men. So this is called the principle of least interest, which the feminist should have known, which is that the person who's doing the pursuing has the least power.
Correct. It is always the one who loves the most has the least power.
Right. So women made a big mistake in taking the sexual initiative, even though it sounded good on paper. It turns out that it's not so smart to pursue a man. Always.
Let's underline that. It is smart to spark an interest, create a flame, but don't fan the flame. Let him fan the flame.
Right. It's very smart to flirt the right way. That is to create sexual tension through a dynamic of having and not having, a kind of play of yes and no, assent and dissent. We've got the wrong idea about flirtation. If you look, there's a book called...
You're touching such great things because what, you know, the flirting is, what I tell people, flirting is like playing tag. You're it. And then it has to be, I'm it. Uh-huh. So it's like the playfulness, like playing a game without really having the rules of the game known per se.
Right.
Because if you know the rules of the game, it's not a game anymore.
But it gives the women back the power of choice.
I love that. Yeah, since I have two daughters, I'm going to make them listen to this.
Yeah.
So
was a sociologist, George Simmel. Everybody's forgotten him, but he was a great 19th century sociologist. And he thought that this was a woman's A weapon, that this is how she was able to choose the man that she wanted, by raising desire through this tension of yes, no, back and forth, in a playful way.
Good. So
she
the
could
advice decide. That you would give women in their 30s and 40s who are looking to actually be in a relationship, how should they go about? What changes could they make to be a better seductress?
Oh, I think the first thing is to just ramp up your self-esteem. This is a major problem. I mean, we've got 50 to 80% of women in America who aren't happy with their bodies. So that has to get fixed right away, I think.
Do their bodies have to be fixed, or do they have to just be happy with their bodies?
No. The bodies don't have to be
fixed. So it's their mind that has to be fixed.
Oh, no.
And I'm emphasizing that because people, when they talk about their bodies, then they're running at the gym and they're going for liposuction and plastic surgery, but it's their mind that has to be fixed.
Right. I don't think men... I don't think men care so much about a woman's body, to be perfectly honest. I mean, they're so...
See, here's what I would say. I don't think a man continually care.
No.
Okay. I think that, in fact, that to some extent, genetically, there is some sort of attraction.
Right.
But I think that the personality, the mind, is so much more powerful than anything else.
Right.
That the mind can, in fact... way overcompensate for that.
Right. Ubiquity dulls vision. And George Bernard Shaw said it best. He said, when beauty, a beautiful person, is in the house 3 days, whoever notices it? I mean, after that.
And I agree.
I mean, after that fades, then a man becomes interested in other qualities that a woman has. And those are the ones that really count. I mean, mind spells are the really heavy magic.
Mind spells. Could you tell me what a mind spell is?
Well, a mind spell.
Tell us what a mind spell. So build up the self-esteem, and I want to hear about this mind spell.
Yeah, well, mind spells are psychological charms. These are a mix. You can throw in anything you want, really. But, I mean, the major ones, I guess, would be festivity. Another one would be, we mentioned flattery, honest flattery, by the way. Conversation, I think. This is absolutely crucial, one of the lost skills. I mean, the Scheherazade effect is really, really important. And in addition to that, we mentioned nurture. That's key, too. So... there are a whole range of psychological charms, but the real key to the whole thing is not any one of these charms. It's a mix, a continual mix of sedate and elate, kind of mixed in with a tang of mystery and obstacles and sort of... a little bit of intrigue.
One of the things that is most exciting for the woman to hear is because so many women feel that as they age, they lose their power. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think that's the complete opposite. That, in fact, they never could lose their power. Why? You tell me why I'm right or wrong. Is age a factor in being a seductress? Or could you, in fact, be at any age and still have that power?
I think you can be any age. I think if you're a seductress, your powers potentiate with age. You've been around the block. You know more. Your mind spells are ramped up, and you are really fascinating with age if you've been fascinating when you're young. And I have a whole chapter in my book called Silver Foxes. And all of these women were dynamite as they got older. They were able to reel in anybody they wanted as they got older. So this is...
And would they gravitate, by the way, to younger men? Or it didn't matter to them? What were they looking for? Was it the challenge?
They were looking for... then we're getting back to my present book, Swoon. They were looking for seducers. That is to say, men who adore women, who are charming, who are interesting, and who love them. If you think about it, Edith Piaf... a perfect example. I mean, here she is, you know, short, squat, no figure at all. In fact, one of her rivals said, you know, you're short, you're badly dressed, you haven't got a bosom. Who are you going to get? And the answer was everybody, including Yves Montand, who dumped Marilyn Monroe. But anyway, as she got...
Is this why the gyms have a bounty on your head?
They don't want to hear this.
She's a mock lady. She's actually here in disguise.
Nobody wants to hear this.
You know what? The truth is, everyone wants to hear this.
I hope so.
Because our obsessive, obnoxious, you know, introspective on the external rather than the internal power of a person is the message.
Yes, you put it in a nutshell. Exactly. And as for Edith Piaf, her weapon of choice was humor. And, you know, Aphrodite was laughter-loving goddess. And apparently, when she got going and started telling jokes and stories, and no man could resist her. That's what her sister said. She had never seen a man who could resist Edith. Anyway, when she was an older woman, really, beaten up, she'd been in an accident, she looked a wreck if you look at photographs. Who should she find but this adorable, handsome Egyptian guitarist, 20 years younger, who fell at her feet, adored her, married her, and attended to her until she died. And still talks about her. There was a feature in Paris Match a month ago of pictures of him and Edith Piaf.
So here's something that I'm going to underline. One of my favorite movies of all time was Out of Africa with Robert Redford. Uh-huh. And the one of the stars, and I forgot who she was, but what I was enamored by was that she was able to tell a story.
Yes.
And she told the story at dinner, surrounded by men, and every man fell in love with her.
I remember that scene.
Okay. Every man fell in love with her. And I think that the ability to bring something to the table, to tell a story, to bring life in.
Yes.
And this is something for all women to know. Men don't want to do all the work.
Right.
They don't want to have all the conversations. They don't want to hear the woman say, "Talk to me." Bring something to the table.
Right. Women should learn to be funny, and it can be learned. They say it's innate. I don't believe that at all. I mean, you can start looking for humorous events.
Correct. Something can be innate, but it doesn't mean you can't be the best at it.
Exactly.
Okay? Like Michael Jordan didn't actually even make his high school basketball team. But he just plugged away and became the greatest basketball player.
Right. A woman can be entertaining.
I agree.
And I think that's a wonderful thing to teach and to even help you as a person evolve. Because when you're telling an entertaining story, it's uplifting and you feel better. And optimism and this joie de vivre I was talking about earlier is intensely attractive to a man.
I completely agree, because what happens is it allows the man to actually shut off.
Right.
And be entertained.
Yes.
And
laugh.
And laugh and
right.
relax.
Right.
You know, and that is incredibly powerful.
Right.
You know, it's why men play golf. And it sounds like the seductress is
better than golf.
Better than golf. Now, is there a difference between a moral seductress and an amoral? One who will simply more or less gravitate towards single men, or do seductresses, do they have a consciousness about if the man is married, you know, stay away, or it doesn't matter? Tell me.
Right. I think you have to look at this through an historical perspective. In the time when women had no other options, when men were a life support, they tended to be amoral in the sense that their existence depended on a man. So a lot of them didn't care. They'd go after another man's husband. They would be unfaithful, promiscuous, whatever it took to prevail. So in the past, I think they tended to be more amoral than today. I think we hold seductresses to a higher standard today because we don't have to seduce for our supper anymore. It's just a matter of having control of your romantic life, of getting who you want, keeping who you want. And I think then you have moral obligations that didn't exist in the past. In the past, these women were saboteurs of patriarchy. Almost anything was possible because they were working against an unjust system.
Right.
So you have to give them a little moral leeway. But I think today, I think it's important that to be a real seductress, you shouldn't be a bad woman. And I think if you did do that kind of thing, you'd be playing right into the stereotype I was talking about earlier of the man-eating, vicious
So seductresses
vamp.
Has evolved as survival needs have changed.
Beautifully put. Mm-hmm. As their survival needs have changed, I think that they have more obligations now ethically, which is the way it should be as society becomes more equalized. And that applies to men as well.
So something – let's go back to what we just said. Seductresses are not naturally – always born. Often they are made by taking a look at the skills of seductresses. You know, when I do neuroplasticity or hypnosis, I tell everyone I'm going to give you the fuck you gene, which means you're not going to care what people think. Okay, you're simply going to be who you are and not focus on absorbing hurt or giving hurt, but just develop your own identity.
Yes, indifference to cultural norms.
Correct.
This is because
cultural norms, just like financial pundits, are always wrong.
Gotcha.
Well, actually, they were so ahead of their time because they knew more about how the brain works than the current neurologist. Okay, they knew how to tap into the pleasure centers of sight, auditory pleasure centers, psychological pleasure centers.
Right.
You know, they knew it probably by trial and error.
Right. Right, I'm sure. But as you say, it's survival. It was a matter of life or death. In the case of Cora Pearl, this is a woman, again, it's usually the rape to riches story on almost all the courtesan biographies. She was raped on her way home from working as a milliner. And in England at this time, now this is the mid-19th century, there was no choice. I mean, you became a governess or a servant and lived in poverty until you died, an early old age usually. Instead, she went to Paris. There were 100,000 prostitutes in Paris at that time. She was ugly. She had a pig's nose. She had a round clown's face. She had nothing going for her at all. But through trial and error, she made la garde. Only 1% of the prostitutes were able to become courtesans, that is to choose the men that they wanted. And she struggled. She decided to be completely unique herself. Her specialty was disinhibition. She gave transvestite balls and people danced with pigs. And she invented the bustle. Whenever she came out of her house, it was a social event because she wore something absolutely outrageous. She would dye her dog to match her hair. And was just a sparkling presence, really sparkling, and became the queen of outrage, she was called. But she had every nobleman in Europe in love with her. She wore a chain of her admirers around her neck. So that, again, as you say, this is something that was desperate. And she's not alone in that. It was a question of almost the gutter or success.
So why are so many men still obsessed with beauty? Is it because they have not figured out that there's a very short window of beauty and you get tired of it quickly? Tell me why men are still obsessed, you know, with the thin, attractive, beautiful person. Is it their own insecurity?
Well, there are some theories about that. I mean, I think your first idea is right, that, you know, it's a cultural concept, you know, that a beautiful woman is the sexual being that you want. Certainly evolutionary psychology plays into that. But there's another theory which is kind of interesting, and that is that it's a defense mechanism against female sexuality. And that has, I don't know, it has some credibility among psychiatrists that men who are afraid of women use female beauty as a shield from getting close to women and really connecting with them on an emotional level and all the messiness of female sexuality. So beauty is... become that kind of
actually, I think there's a lot
kind of
truth
a fetish,
and I do want to say this, and for those of you very beautiful women who are listening, it doesn't mean you have to become ugly to be a seductress.
No.
It means you need to realize that beauty alone is not going to do it.
Perfect, got it.
This way we put all that into it,
right?
You know, the problem with you is we could go on for. Ever, okay?
Yeah,
we could actually go. I didn't even look at the notes that they gave me. You know, we're going to have you back again because
Wonderful.
You are magical.
Oh, well, you okay? are. You
and,
are.
It's such a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much.
And I will definitely see you soon again.
Thank you. And thank you so much.
Bye now.
Wonderful.
I'd like to thank my guest, Betsy Priolo, once again for appearing on our show. It was amazing. I want everyone to go on her website, BetsyPriolo.com. That's P-R-I-O-L-E-A-U. Pick up a copy of her book. It's called Seductresses, Women Who Ravish the World and Their Lost Art of Love. Everyone out there, be sure to check out all our other episodes. Tell your friends. You're going to have the time of your life. There is actually something for everyone that could not only teach you, but change your life, which is what this show is all about. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, and remember, to every problem, there is a solution. I am your problem solver. We have great, fantastic shows down the pike. Tell everyone, tune in till next time.